This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran's foreign minister is in Mali at the beginning of a two-nation tour, and that's part of plans to forge tighter political and economic bonds with Africa. The Russian foreign minister Lavrov says his country strongly condemns Israel's missile attacks against Syria. Malaysia's top court orders former Prime Minister Najib Razak to begin a 12-year prison term on charges related to a multi-billion dollar graft scandal. This is World News. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. Welcome. The Iranian foreign minister has arrived in the Malian capital Bamako for high-level talks and meetings with the West African country's officials. Amir Abdullahian says that the trip is in line with Tehran's policy of comprehensive improvement of ties with West African states. Our correspondent has more from Bamako.
Iran's foreign minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian is in the Malian capital Bamako on the first leg of his African tour, which will later take him to Tanzania and Zanzibar. Amir Abdullahian is heading a high-ranking political and economic delegation. A group of representatives of several private sector companies also accompanies him during his visit. The top diplomat was welcomed by his Malian counterpart, Abdoulaye Diop. Upon arrival at Bamako's international airport, the Malian foreign minister called the visit a sign of Iran's will to enhance ties with the African country. Amir Abdullahian confirmed that Tehran seeks all-out expansion of relations with Mali and has special plans for this purpose.
I am confident that we will start a new chapter of relations between Tehran and Mali under the government of President Raisi.
Amir Abdullahian is scheduled to also meet with Mali's interim president during his stay before he departs for Tanzania on Wednesday. The visit is part of a wider policy roadmap in Iran. The foreign ministry says Tehran is looking to expand ties with African nations, including Mali, in the fields of economy, banking, and trade.
The Iranian military is set to launch a large-scale drill involving 150 drones on Wednesday. Army officials say that the exercise will involve ground, navy, and air forces. The maneuver will be the first-ever combined drill between the military's four branches and the joint air defense bases. New drones, which have been jointly produced by the Defense Ministry and knowledge-based companies, will also be put to test. Other UAVs, including reconnaissance and combat aircraft, will also take part in the nationwide maneuver. Iran has on multiple occasions said that its drills aim to boost the country's deterrent capacity. Iran underlining the need for the U.S. to show genuine commitment to nuclear disarmament and creation of a Middle East that's free of weapons of mass destruction. Iran ambassador to UN expressed deep concerns regarding the lack of progress in the implementation of nuclear disarmament obligations. Majid Tahrawanchi made a comment in a 10th review conference of the parties to the Treaty on the Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons. The official also called for Israel's accession to the NPT without preconditions and for the elimination of the regime's nuclear weapons. Israel is widely believed to possess hundreds of nuclear warheads, but the regime has not admitted to holding a stockpile. Public analyst Kendo Xu says that the U.S. lacks fairness in international order and keeps demonstrating its hypocritical stance on nuclear disarmament.
When the U.S. talk about rules-based international order, usually it means like the U.S. rules-based international order. Obviously, there's a lack of fairness in this issue. All people understand that there's a need probably to limit the spread of nuclear weapons because it's for our own sake, for our own safety. But we have to do it in a fair manner. For example, as you mentioned, the U.S. is one of the most powerful nuclear country in the world, and also they dropped the first two bombs on the Japanese soil in 1945. And then in the Middle East, if you limit the horizon to the Middle East, Israel, as we all know, that is open secret, is an undeclared nuclear state over there. So when the U.S. is focusing, together with the European countries, focusing on limiting the ability of the Iranians to develop not bomb, but the nuclear technology, for example. And they are so keen to prevent this country from even develop such technologies, because these technologies can be used to produce energies. It's not necessary for bombs, always keep that in mind. So it just demonstrates this, their being hypocritical, their lack of fairness in terms of international affairs over there.
Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov says his country strongly condemns Israel's missile attacks against Syria.
We have strongly condemned Israel's dangerous practice of strikes on Syrian territory, including the very disturbing episode of the attack on Damascus International Airport on June 10th, followed by attacks on the port of Tartus. We demand that Israel respect the resolution of the UN Security Council and above all respect the sovereignty and territorial integrity of the Syrian Arab Republic.
Lavrov made those comments in a joint presser with his visiting Syrian counterpart Faisal Maqdad in Moscow. The top Russian diplomat hailed ties with Syria and said that Moscow would continue support for the Arab country and its fight against terrorism. In response to a question about Turkey's preparations for a new operation in northern Syria, Lavrov said that no such action should be allowed there.
As for the question of how the situation in the north of Syria may develop, the main thing is that no new military actions should be allowed. Negotiations should take place via diplomatic channels on the basis of political principles that existed in relations between Syria and Turkey before.
The Russian foreign minister says any kind of escalation in Syria would be unacceptable. He also accused U.S.-led Western countries of complicating the situation around the world with their aggressive policies. Lavrov said that the West is adopting colonial policies toward the Middle East and North Africa and in Ukraine's surrounding areas. He also thanked Syria for its recognition of Ukraine's breakaway Luhansk and Donetsk People's Republics. The top Syrian diplomat also conveyed his country's support for the Russian military operation in Ukraine. Maqdad is leading a delegation that will hold talks on bilateral and international issues. Turning to Iraq, supporters of cleric Muqtada al-Sadr are launching a sit-in outside the Supreme Judicial Council in a move that could prolong the political deadlock in that country. Protesters carrying placards gathered outside the judicial body in capital Baghdad to step up pressure to dissolve the parliament. On August 10th, Sadr gave the council a week to suspend the legislator and pave the way for new elections. The body rejected the demand, arguing it lacks the authority to do so. Sadr's supporters stormed the parliament premises twice last month. They have set up tents there. Meantime, caretaker Prime Minister Mustafa al-Kadhimi has cut short a visit to Egypt to monitor the developments back home. Iraq has been without a government or a head of a state for months. Last parliamentary elections saw an alliance led by Sadr win most seats, but he failed to form a government. Palestinians have held a mass funeral for a young man who has succumbed to his injuries sustained during a recent Israeli raid on the occupied West Bank city of Nablus. Mohammed Araishi died on Tuesday. He was fighting for his life after being critically wounded by Israeli forces 2 weeks ago. During that raid, three other Palestinians, including a senior member of resistance movement, Ibrahim Nabulsi, were also killed. The regime has intensified crackdown across the occupied territories recently, killing dozens of people. Israeli forces have also detained dozens of Palestinians. Hundreds of Lebanese people have staged a rally in the capital of Beirut to mark the 40th anniversary of Hezbollah resistance movement. On the occasion, Hezbollah leaders said that the resistance will try its utmost to protect Lebanon and continue support for the Palestinian people. Mariam Saleh reports.
Hezbollah Secretary General Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah has highlighted the stance of the resistance front in addition to the significant achievements accomplished in the past 40 years.
One of our duties in the future is to strengthen the strategies of deterrence to protect Lebanon's people, land, state, sovereignty and dignity, and natural resources and treasures.
The most pressing matter awaiting the resistance, he said, was the issue of maritime resources.
The main and current challenge that we're facing now and the few upcoming days is the issue of gas and petrol and the demarcation of the maritime borders. I will not say anything new. We have said everything that we should say. Now we're all waiting. The Israelis are talking and threatening, but we should wait and see.
The cause of Palestine was also a very significant endeavor, which Hezbollah sees as a duty of the past, present, and future.
In the last 40 years, we always believed in Palestine and the Palestinian resistance. We were dutifully supporting it, and we declared that openly and supported it in all forms, in the media and in politics. We have always declared that we stand by the side of the Palestinian people and the holy sites.
Celebrating 40 years since it was founded as a resistance movement, Hezbollah organized a mass rally where artists used hologram technology to commemorate the movement's martyred leaders. Those attending stressed that if it weren't for the resistance, they would not be here today.
The passion they had, the religious that it was in their heart, that made them believe that they can take care of us, of our lands, of our everything. Without them, we are nothing.
The celebration included real footage of past operations during the Israeli occupation of Lebanon, the liberation of most Lebanese land in May of 2000, as well as significant images from the 2006 summer confrontation of the Israeli assaults, and finally the fight against Takfiri terrorists in the eastern border mountains.
Hezbollah says it's celebrating more than a mere date on the calendar as its establishment day. 40 years ago today, the Israeli army, backed by multinational forces, occupied the capital, Beirut. But here, a group of young men believed liberation was possible and achieved the unthinkable. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Malaysia's top court has ordered former Prime Minister Najib Razak to begin a 12-year prison term on charges related to multi-billion-dollar graft scandal. The court rejected an appeal filed by Najib after he was found guilty on 7 counts 2 years ago. Some $4.5 billion was stolen from the state-owned investment fund that was co-founded by him during his first term in office. Investigators later traced more than $1 billion to accounts linked to the former premier. Najib, who continues to deny any wrongdoing, has testified before court that part of the money was donated by then-Saudi King Abdullah for his election campaign. Criminal breach of trust, abuse of power, and money laundering are among other charges against Najib. He served the country between 2009 and 2018. Before losing the election amid the scandals. Iran has hosted an exhibition of Persian carpets. The event is held to promote Iranian handwoven carpets on the domestic and global stage. Yusuf Jalali reports.
A timeless beauty that tells stories from Iran's rich artistic heritage. Persian carpets are on display in the 29th Iranian Handwoven Carpet Show in Tehran. The event has brought under one roof producers of hand-woven carpets and pictorial rugs from across the country to showcase their latest designs.
The Persian carpet represents the identity of Iranians. Today, you can see machine-made carpets which are significantly lower in quality compared to the hand-woven ones. So this expo helps reintroduce the importance of hand-woven rugs to the people.
For centuries, the Iranian carpet has represented Iran's culture and art. Its unique design and quality have turned the ancient handicraft into a lucrative commodity on the global stage. Less than three decades ago, this sublime art used to be a major export earner for Iran, a viable source of income that accounted for almost one-fifth of the country's non-oil revenues. But today, this is no longer the case, as producers are warning that the Iranian carpet is losing its shine in the global market. From an annual revenue of up to $1 billion in the 1990s, the export of Iranian carpets has slumped to almost zero. One reason behind this freefall has to do with U.S. sanctions, says this carpet trader who used to export to Europe before Washington's anti-Iran measures tightened the screw on the Persian carpet.
In the wake of the sanctions, it's safe to say that our carpet exports have dropped to almost zero. Complications in money transfer are one of the impacts of the sanctions, and the unwillingness of foreign clients to buy from us is the other result, because they fear U.S. punishment if they interact with us.
In 2018, another challenge came into play to knock the Persian carpet out of the global market once and for all. Surprisingly, it's a domestic issue. Since the depreciation of the Iranian rial, the government has imposed tight controls on currency liquidity, which require exporters to return their hard currency proceeds to the country within a very short period of time.
The government is not helping us, yet it's been creating problems for us by the so-called currency treaty. It's impossible to retain the proceeds within only 2 months. We need time to sell our carpets in foreign countries where demand for our hand-woven carpets has declined.
The absence of genuine Iranian carpets in the international market has given way to other rivals to fill the void. Countries such as India, Pakistan, and even Afghanistan have since been supplying the market with cheap and fake copies of Iranian carpets, says this young carpet trader.
India, Afghanistan, Pakistan, they are just representing their tableau rugs and carpets with lower prices. The density of their carpets are lower than Iranian carpets, the colors. And also, if you just use them in your houses, you can see that their colors are faded by passing the time.
Representing Iran's heritage and civilization for thousands of years, the Persian carpet has for the past 2 decades disappeared from many floors and walls. Producers hope that this exhibition would act as a wake-up call for Iranian authorities to take action and dust off all the challenges from the Persian carpet. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
Today, on the dictates of the U.S. and European regimes, the world body has long stopped even its toothless verbal condemnation of the Israeli regime's desecration of Islamic sanctities, says Kayhan, international staff writer, in an article published under the heading, Arab Regime's Treason Emboldening Zionist Attacks on Al-Aqsa. Stay tuned for more. The consequences of the Muslim world's ignoring of the declaration of the Organization of the Islamic Cooperation, OIC, to observe August 21st, the anniversary of the sacrilegious arson attack at Al-Aqsa Mosque in 1969, as World Mosque Day, have become obvious today, with the despicable Zionists feeling emboldened in the further desecration of Islam's third holiest site. Recently, on the 53rd anniversary of that tragic arson attack, gangs of armed Zionists, encouraged by their alliance with the reactionary Arab regimes, stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque to hold Talmudic rituals, even as the Palestinian Islamic Resistance Movement, Hamas, issued a statement apprising the Ummah of dire situation in Beit al-Muqaddas. The Islamic Republic of Iran, which decades earlier had initiated the move at the OIC, observed, as usual, the World Mosque Day to denounce the Zionist regime's crimes against humanity and reaffirm support for the oppressed people of the Zionist usurped land of Palestine. Lebanon's legendary anti-terrorist movement, the Hezbollah, as well as Yemen's Ansarullah, led government in Sana'a, also observed the World Mosque Day and renewed their allegiance to the Palestinian defenders to help liberate Al-Aqsa from Zionist occupation. But most of the Muslim countries were mute, with only some non-governmental organizations commemorating the anniversary of the tragedy. As for reactionary Arab regimes sitting in the lap of U.S. along with their newfound Zionist cousins, the reports from Occupy Palestine failed to arouse whatever is left of their Muslims' conscience and were viewed as mere amusement. The recent spectacle of the godless gangs trampling the sacred compound of the Haram al-Sharif with their boots on was a shock to the local Muslims as well as to the Palestinian Christians who recently lost their prominent journalist Shirin Abu Aghle to a bullet from an Israeli regime troop and who in 1969 had joined their Islamic compatriots in dousing the flames of the arson attack despite the hurdles thrown in the way by Israeli regime troops. In Tehran, Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesperson tweeted, "Resistance is the sole way to save Palestine, and Al-Aqsa Mosque and all mosques across the globe will remain the center of anti-Zionist resistance until the full liberation of Palestine." The Hamas statement from Gaza read, "The occupied city of Beit al-Muqaddas, including the Al-Aqsa Mosque, is the core of the Palestinian struggle against Israeli occupation deliberate attacks. We reiterate that we will keep defending it with all means possible, including comprehensive resistance until liberation and return." It added, "The crime of burning the blessed Al-Aqsa Mosque and Israeli occupation and Zionist aggressors' ongoing crimes against our land, our people, and our holy sites will not break the Palestinian people's determination to stand against Israeli crimes, but rather would ignite the flame of resistance and make us firmly adhere to our legitimate rights until liberation and return home." In 1969, on August 21st, Australian Zionist Dennis Michael Rohan had sneaked into the Al-Aqsa Mosque and set fire to the 800-year-old wooden ivory pulpit, which was badly burnt, along with the southeastern ceiling, as were the ornamental mosaics and two marble pillars between the dome and the mihrab. The fire also burned the altar of Prophet Zachariah and the place of worship of 40 other prophets, damaging an area of nearly 1,500 square meters. Both Muslim and Christian Palestinians joined ranks and rushed to douse the flames, but Israeli regime forces prevented their entry. After short but fierce clashes, they made their way into the sacred sanctuary and started to tackle the fire. After the fire extinguishers failed to work, they looked for sources of water but found the pumps broken and the hoses cut by the Zionists. The Muslim and Christians then quickly banded together to form a human chain and used buckets and other small containers to bring water to the building. The UN Security Council, which on September 15, 1969, passed Resolution 271 under pressure from Muslim countries to condemn the Zionist regime by 11 votes to none with 4 abstentions, made mention of previous resolutions regarding the Geneva Conventions
and the occupation status of Beit al-Muqaddas, but had done nothing concrete. Today, on the dictates of the US and European regimes, the world body has long stopped even its toothless verbal condemnation of the Zionist regime's desecration of Islamic sanctities. The result has been growing acts of blasphemy by the Zionists, who are now in an unholy alliance with the treacherous Arab regimes, which have no regard for the sanctity of Al-Aqsa Mosque. Thus, as Iran, Palestinians, and the rest of the Islamic resistance forces insist, because of the rejection of a peaceful solution to the chronic question by the so-called defenders of democracy, armed struggle is the only way for liberation of Al-Aqsa Mosque and Beit al-Muqaddas.
Your horse returns to Alcamp Riderless.
أزور سيدي ومولاي ومعتمدي ورجاي.
The ocean of dua.
الإمام الحسين زيارة مني ونيابة عن والدي.
Why did you leave us to fend for ourselves? Hussein, Hussein, the slain.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Madarisi, and in this edition of The Ocean of Dua, we are trying to discuss and talk about the different aspects of Ziyarat Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, Ziyarat al-Ashura. So stay with us.
Bari'tu ila Allah wa ilaykum minhum wa min ashiya'ihim wa atba'ihim wa awliya'ihim ya Aba Abdullah inni silmun liman salamakum.
Dear listeners, we were discussing this part of Ziyaratul Ashura. Ya Aba Abdullah, inni silmun liman salamakum wa harbun liman harabakum ila yawmil qiyamah. O Aba Abdullah, surely I am at peace with he who is at peace with you, and at war with he who is at war with you, until the day of resurrection. In this episode, I want to have a review and give us a short conclusion of what we have been discussing so far. And in the next episode, we will, God willing, move on to the next part of Ziyaratul Ashura. So here, we address Imam Hussein alayhi salam directly, and we say and declare, Ya Aba Abdullah. This means we feel his presence. We must see him and call him and address him directly. And then we say that out loud. Inni silmun liman salamakum wa harbun liman harabakum. I am at peace with he who is at peace with you, and at war with he who is at war with you. This declaration is a reflection of so many traditions. For example, the Holy Prophet addressing the Ahlul Kisa says, أنا سلم لمن سالمكم وحرب لمن حاربكم. I am at peace with he who is at peace with you, and at war with he who is at war with you. The word silm means peace, and signify sulh, and this is the opposite side of being at war with someone. So, in this part, we express our peace, we express our harmony with those who are at peace with Imam Hussein alayhi salam and the Ahlul Bayt. And it moves on, وَحَرْبٌ لِمَنْ حَارَبَكُمْ, and at war with he who is at war with you. The concept of harb does not always take place by means of guns and ammunitions. Harb is also something like attacking people's souls and minds. So the point we must consider in this part of Ziyaratul Ashura, in this day that we are living, is that we have to try to distinguish the different war fronts and defend and fight valiantly in the way of Allah. We must know who is fighting in the side of Allah and defend him. Now, one important point is that we have to find and try to establish a unified basis for our friendship and enmity. And then, considering the human dimension, we can find the path towards salvation more easily. We have to try not to take a mu'min as an enemy, because this will hamper us from reaching paradise. And that criterion mentioned by the Ahlul Bayt is this: كَذَبَ مَنِ ادَّعَى مَحَبَّتَنَا وَلَمْ يَتَبَرَّأْ مِنْ عَدُوِّنَا. This is far-fetched. He who claims our love but does not express his detachment from our enemy. This is a liar.
When people ask, I'm confused about which school is right or which madhab is right, go to Karbala. Look at Karbala, it clarifies it instantaneously. Anybody says, I'm confused, say, please go to Karbala and tell me what happened, why it happened, and what does it have to do with your religion. You will see it completely exemplifies. It clarifies, it takes all the blurs out instantaneously. SubhanAllah, that's the miracle of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Imam Hussein alayhi salam's main foundation of morality is: do not allow tyranny. Do not allow evil doing. Do not allow indecency. Why is Imam like this? Because he knows Allah. He appreciates him. He understands his dimensions. That's why we must love them so much. We must love them so much that don't let anybody else take us away from them. There should be no room in our thoughts. No matter who we admire in this world, no matter how great a person we look at, never move the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt out of the center of the heart. Never. They will know that their Khalifa lied to them because he told them they don't pray. And if they see them praying on the battlefield, their hearts will change. So stop them from praying. Imagine how evil these people were. That's how much lies they had. And you cannot eradicate this lie at the level that we are talking about unless you give your blood for the love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
So in this part, we express our hatred from the enemies until the day of resurrection. إِلَى يَوْمِ الْقِيَامَةِ. And the most important aspect, I assume, that we have discussed so far is this part of this phrase, إِلَى يَوْمِ الْقِيَامَةِ. This means we will distinguish any kind of harb and war until the day of resurrection, specifically and most importantly, jihadul akbar, the greater jihad and fight against ourselves. This means we are transcending the horizons to detach ourselves, not just from the evils and its forces in this apparent world, but also against our nafs, against the human souls. And this fight must begin, and fundamentally, of course, begins with the human soul. And the reward would be, as Imam Sadiq alayhi salam mentions, كان مع الحسين عليه السلام في درجته في الجنة. He would be with Imam Hussein alayhi salam in his station in Jannah. So, what we concluded in this part of Ziyaratul Ashura is that it is imperative for us to kill this evil inviting self and attain the victorious state of peaceful self, that Nafsul Mutma'innah that the Holy Quran talks about. That way, we will be always victorious in different battles of this world. But the first war, the greater war, is our inward war. And this is the kind of war that Imam Hussein alayhi salam teaches us. He won that war beautifully by sacrificing faithful men and women. In fact, this is the greater war that we must see in the plains of Karbala. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
الذي صنعت من الرمح منبرا ظمآن والزمان بعينيك ممطرا نعم الأمير أنت حسين وقدوتي ساروا إليك قلبي وعقلي ودمعتي يا محيي الكرامة تبكيك كل عين لبيك يا إمامي لبيك يا حسين بالروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين بالروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين لبيك يا حسين لبيك يا حسين.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Cultural news. Social news. Scientific news. Artistic news. With delight.
Japanese plastic food artisans are showcasing their mouth-watering artificial creations at an exhibition in Japan's capital city, Tokyo. From the Leaning Tower, a pizza, to fish slicing and cooking, or even the quirky stacked pancakes, you can find almost everything at the exhibit. Other sculptors, including a deep-fried shrimp with full-breaded legs scaling a mountain of shredded cabbage like a tiger. Another creation on display is a Tetris game made of chicken. Plastic food artists get really excited for the exhibition each year as they are given a chance to practice their own spin on creativity, bringing food to life with curious characters.
So normally we have to follow orders from clients. We take their views on board when we're making items. Normally that's our work. But for the competition, you can use your imagination. How it finally ends up is totally up to you. I like that aspect of it.
There are some 60 sculptors on display. Some are silly, but others highlight the artist's skills. The models were made with the same careful detail as the rock-solid noodle soups and crispy-looking plastic snacks on display outside Japanese restaurants. There is a lucrative business for them in Japan.
Deforest management plays a key role in mitigating climate change. Like many world countries, China has accelerated environmental and social structural changes in urban spaces to deal with this pertinent issue. The Donggu Forest Park is one such project that has provided city dwellers enough space to breathe. It comes into being from what local people usually called rotten woods. The park on the northern bank of the Xiaolinge River covers an area of nearly 120 hectares. Nobody would come there before, as the place was full of flies and mosquitoes. But now, with the environment improved and water cleaned in the river, the place has turned into a wonderland, attracting locals and even foreign tourists.
Now the sky is blue, the water clean and the air fresh, with green greeting you wherever you go. The elderly play Tai Chi or do bodybuilding exercises here. Young people play football, basketball and table tennis.
Over the past 20 years, a large number of cities in China have undergone a brief but rapid urban expansion. Most of these cities are now facing social problems such as an aging population and a high prevalence of chronic diseases. A comprehensive environmental improvement program in the area was initiated in 2014 in order to create space for those who want to take a break from their everyday works.
Whilst not being as painful as a broken limb, animals like humans suffer from chronic and acute pain from gum infections, broken teeth, and bacterial spread through the circulation. A 16-year-old elephant in Pakistan is one such case. Madhubala, suffering for years from a dental infection caused by a broken tusk, has finally got relief thanks to vets, dentists. Named after a legendary Indian actress, Madhubala's eyes were taped shut, her legs tied to support her during sedation and subsequent treatment at a Karachi zoo. The vets had to use drills and other heavy surgical tools to extract the infected tusk. She is one of four African elephants being treated in Karachi by an eight-member team from Global Animal Welfare Group, Four Paws. A Pakistani court last year asked Four Paws to assess the health of the animals after local animal rights activists raised concerns about their well-being. England's Paradise Wildlife Park welcomes its new guest, an endangered red panda cub. The mother, Tilly, gave birth to the cub just 1 month after she lost her breeding partner, Nampang. Experts say Tilly had been under a breeding project for 4 years. The cub has been named Little Red, and his birth is being celebrated as a, quote, symbol of hope. Red pandas are classed as an endangered species and are on the red list of the International Union for Conservation of Nature. The bushy-tailed bamboo munchers dwell in high-altitude Asian forests, and their population is now fewer than 2,500. Lightning strikes are a very powerful and misunderstood force of nature that we all often see being used in films. A spectacular lightning strike has illuminated the sky over the Scottish town of Dundee. A video from an eyewitness that captured the hypnotic scene has been shared on several social media platforms. The lightning in the clip can be seen sending several bolts in opposite directions. Below, a church spire is silhouetted against the lightning flashes. But lightning is not always spectacular, as sometimes it causes fire to tower and high rises. Last month, a wind turbine caught fire after being struck by a lightning bolt in North Texas, United States.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Forestry authorities in southwestern China have opened a new canteen for wild Asian elephants in a bid to stop them wandering into villages. The canteen in Yunnan province provides the animals with attractive and nutritious meals while exploring man-animal harmonious coexistence. During these years, the province has explored multiple ways to reduce the encounters between humans and elephants and try to keep the animals away from farmers' crops. There are now approximately 1,400 hectares of dining halls for elephants, with many expanding from 100 to 240, such as corn, rice and sugarcane. They are planted on a large scale and within easy reach of the elephants. The location of such canteens is extremely selective, usually away from villages and major roads, and the chefs are locals.
Stunning scenes in Spain as the last supermoon of the year illuminates the night sky amid fireworks and fairs marking the start of festivities for a public holiday. In Malaga, fireworks left the sky a mix of colors against the bright moon. There was also a spectacle of drones that lightened the sturgeon moon. Locals in the Canary Islands also celebrated the three-day holiday by lighting up a Ferris wheel as the full moon beamed beautifully in the sky. If the moon is within 10% of its closest distance to Earth at the moment of full moon, it is called a supermoon. The supermoon has various hues and appears bigger and brighter than when the moon is at its farthest point from Earth. Have you ever heard of fighting nature with nature? Well, that's what the San Francisco Metro system in the U.S. did to stop pigeons from overrunning the place. The station has hired a hawk as the new guard to patrol the area. Pac-Man is a five-year-old Harris's hawk who has taken up the perch at the station. In terms of experience, he is pretty new as he finished training only 9 months ago. The station recently renovated its building, installing netting and spikes to prevent pigeons from nesting. But these birds still seem to find their way to hang around. So with the Falconer Force, Ricky Ortiz and his hawk were hired this summer to keep the pigeons at bay.
So a typical day is we get here, we make our round, we start off down in the bottom inside the facility, making sure there's no pigeons hanging out in there. And then we work our way up here to the platforms and just check the ledges and the roof and make sure that they're not trying to sneak in on us and keep them out. And he does a pretty good job of that.
The team patrols 3 days a week and Pac-Man is allowed to swoop in and scare any pigeons sitting around. The Falconer says less than half of the pigeons they left after the first week of Pac-Man flying and establishing the territory. Commuters and station managers say they also noticed the difference. The Falconer says he usually keeps his feathery friend happy on the job by giving him snacks throughout the day. This also encourages the hawk not to feast on the pigeons and local rodents.
Technology helps transform the global food production system and mitigates its impact on the environment. China's autonomous region of Tibet is turning barren land into fertile one using greenhouse technology. Once removed, Beinan County is now the largest off-season vegetable supplier in Tibet. The region has taken advantage of its highland conditions to develop a state-of-the-art agricultural structure. Beinong has now more than 2,200 modern vegetable greenhouses and nearly 12,000 hectares of planting area, some built at unimaginable altitude. But one cannot deny the role of railways and highway transport for making this county a hub for organic vegetables. The income of locals has also been significantly improved, and they are now living a happy and prosperous life. If you're a private collector of wild animals, there is good news for you. A Pakistani zoo is auctioning off a dozen lions due to a lack of money to feed them and a space to house them. Lahore Safari Zoo currently has so many big cats that they have to take turns accessing paddocks. Officials say auctioning them will free up space and also reduce expenses. Zoo is currently housing 29 lions. The lions auctioned this week will be between 2 to 5 years of age. Each big cat is estimated to fetch around 150,000 Pakistan rupees. That's not too much, as some zookeepers claim. Even conservationists have expressed anger over auctioning lions to private collectors instead of transferring them to other zoos. Happy news for zoo goers in Nicaragua. Two adorable baby tapirs are born at a country's national zoo south of Managua, adding attractions to the visitors. Two endangered tapirs, a male and a female, were born hours apart at the weekend. In a video shared by the zoo, one of the newborns is seen suckling and walking near her mother. The director of the zoo says the babies are yet to be named but are in perfect health. Tapirs inhabit jungle and forest regions of South and Central America, with one species inhabiting Southeast Asia. They look something like pigs with trunks, but they are actually related to horses and rhinos. Nicaragua launched a project that seeks to conserve this animal in danger of extinction due to hunting and the destruction of natural habitat. Now we'll take you to mine-riddled French island, Chazoms, which is emerging from the ruins and gradually turning into workers' paradise. Chazoms, close to the port city of Saint-Malo, has an amazing landscape but remains uninhabited as it saw a devastating bombardment by the Allies during the World War II. The Nazi-occupied island was victim of the most bombings per square meter. Known as Martyred and Forbidden Island, it was opened only in 2018 after extensive demining efforts allowed the opening of a marked path. Now, every year, thousands of day trippers make the short boat journey, marveling at the spectacular maritime views and flourishing wildlife there. The safe area still makes up just 3% of the island, but it lets visitors wander between rusty cannons and bunkers. Some workers say they hope the trail will be lengthened to allow a complete tour of the island.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kHz for Southern Africa and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
We'll be right back.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.